So when you first start thinking about traveling during a pandemic, you're like, that's kind of sketchy. I mean, you're thinking about your flights and all the different, you know, regulations and things that you're going to have to deal with and follow. But then you're at like a wonder of a world by yourself. You're at all these famous historical places with like two or three other people. You're getting rows to yourself on long haul international flights. And you're like, well, you know what? Maybe this isn't so bad after all. And welcome back to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me here today. I'm not sure, you know, how much you pay attention to my release schedule or not, but I did miss last week. I was actually hiking in Arkansas, surprisingly enough, when a friend of mine kind of proposed the topic of going hiking in Arkansas. I kind of just assumed it would sort of just be like a flat little hike, but let me tell you, it was not. It was pretty difficult. It was called the Eagle Rock Loop up there in Ouachita National Forest there. It was about 2 hours from Texarkana, that area up there. And it kicked my butt, let me tell you. It was 30 miles. And we did it in 2 days. So we hiked about 15, 16 miles each day, camped in the middle. And it was pretty difficult. It was really beautiful. I was pleasantly surprised. The views were really pretty. But the hike in and of itself was pretty hard. I would definitely, if I ever did the loop again, I would definitely recommend doing it in 3 days. Instead of two, just so you could kind of, you know, take a little bit slower pace there. I mean, we were booking it the entire time, and we're hiking for about 8 hours per day. So, you know, if you could, you know, maybe do like 6 hours of hiking each day and do, you know, 3 days worth of hiking, it might be a little bit more enjoyable. But it was pretty heavily trafficked. I mean, we were, you know, I would say we passed a few people every hour or so. So, you know, I feel like you could definitely do that on your own solo. And if you did get into any kind of trouble, you know, there'd be people passing. Also, it's a loop, so there are several different entry points as well. And so that was pretty cool. So you could really just start wherever you wanted. There's five sort of like hills or mountainous regions there. On the loop, and we started right at those five to knock them out of the way. And I'm really glad we did that because I don't think I could have done five, you know, pretty difficult hills/mountains there on the second day. So, yeah, hiking in Arkansas, pretty cool. If you're in the area, definitely check out Eagle Rock's Loop. It's a fun weekend, fun, you know, long weekend trip. Definitely recommend the winter. You're constantly crossing the river there. There's some great swimming spots, so definitely check it out. All right, so to get into today's episode, when I was planning this, I just kept writing things down. I mean, there was so much that I did in Turkey, and it's honestly a place that I would want to go back to. You know, I've mentioned this before, but there's a lot of places where you kind of go and you're like, okay, cool, I've been there, I'm going to check it off the list. But then there's also places where you go and you're like, wow, that kind of just whet my appetite. I want more. I want to go back, either new places in the same country, or I want to experience, you know, some of the same places again. And so Turkey is definitely one of those places. Istanbul is probably one of my favorite cities that I visited. I mean, there's so much there. I think it's like the only major city that's on two different continents. It's in Europe and in Asia. And it's just so full of culture, so full of history. It's just a great place. And I spent, I think I only spent like two full days there in Istanbul. And I would love to go back and spend more time there. It's just a great city. It has all the luxuries of Europe. And yet it has all the culture and history of, like, you know, Asia Minor and all of that. So I really love Turkey. Istanbul is great. I can't wait to talk to you about it today. I've mentioned several times how I got to Turkey, and I'll just throw it in there one more time. I actually flew straight from JFK to Turkey, to Istanbul, on a nonstop flight. It was pretty sweet. But then to save like $500, I went ahead and flew from Istanbul to Albania and then to Serbia and then back to Istanbul the next day. And you know, that saved me like $500, and I got to spend some time in Serbia and a little bit of time in Albania. And so, you know, it's kind of a win-win for me. I did cut into my time in Turkey, but you know, it was $500 and that was, you know, like a quarter of the cost of the trip. So I kind of, you know, had to do it. That's probably the weirdest way that I've ever gotten to a destination before. Kind of just found it by messing around with different, you know, airline flights. But it worked out in the end. Now, this was, I mean, dead center of COVID. And this was, so far, I'm planning on taking a trip this summer, and, you know, it seems like it's still going to be around a little bit, but this was, up until the point, my first international trip during COVID. And so I was pretty anxious mainly about the flights, getting into places and things like that. I wasn't too worried about getting coronavirus or anything like that. But I was just worried about the entrance requirements. I know when I was leaving JFK, I had made sure that all of my stops did not require a COVID test or anything like that. And so at the time, Albania, Serbia, Turkey, and North Macedonia, which is in that same little area, did not require COVID testing to get into the country. So that's one of the reasons why I checked those places out and stopped through them. But I was, you know, things change like overnight when it comes to all this stuff. And so I was kind of nervous when it came to all that. I mean, I think I went in November, and I think by like December or January, Turkey was requiring a COVID test. And so, you know, if I show up to the airport and all of a sudden, oh, well, they started requiring it yesterday, well, that would have sucked, you know? So I was a little bit nervous there, when I was at JFK. You know, obviously the ticket agents, you know, they can't know all 192 countries' rules for, COVID testing. And so they're all just like, do you have your negative COVID test? And I was like, I'm not supposed to have one. And so, you know, they like call someone or look in like this huge, you know, book full of all the updated rules and guidelines. And they're like, okay, yeah, you're right. And so it was pretty nerve wracking. But you know, I made it there, and it was pretty easy. You know, all the research I had done had said, you know, when you land in Istanbul, they're going to do all this screening and stuff like that. And, you know, there might've been like a thermal thermometer, like a thermal camera as you walked off the plane. I think there was. But it's not like there was someone there, you know, scanning your temperature as you walked through or anything like that. And so it was pretty easy. And so right off the bat, getting into Turkey, I had a hard time figuring out how to get from the airport to downtown Istanbul. And the main airport there is about an hour and a half away from downtown Istanbul. It's pretty far outside the city, and they're currently working on a metro line out to the airport. I think it's supposed to be done maybe in the next year or two. But at the moment, there's no way to get into the city, like with a metro or anything like that. So there's actually a bus that takes you to different places in the city. I had a hard time finding this out for some reason. Most places just told you to take a cab, but that was going to be super expensive. So I did find a bus that will take you to the Sultanate section of Istanbul, which is sort of like the old section. It's where like the Hagia Sophia is, where the Blue Mosque, the Grand Bazaar, all that kind of stuff is in the Sultanate area of Istanbul. And that's where I was really going to be hubbing out of for the next couple of days. And so, you know, it was fairly cheap, a few dollars, I think, to get down there. And it did take about an hour and a half on this bus. It did not, I think it made one stop on the entire trip, which was pretty nice. So it was a pretty direct route from the airport to the old town of Istanbul. So I landed pretty early in the day. And so I went ahead and checked right into my hotel. Now, the bus drops you off about a mile and a half from the Hagia Sophia. And my hotel was like right next to the Hagia Sophia. And so I could have obviously, you know, gotten a cab there pretty easily. But I decided to walk. They actually have like a trolley there, like a train cable car sort of deal. I didn't, you know, mess with that at all. I'm sure it was pretty easy to figure out, but I didn't even worry about it. And so I ended up just walking about a mile to my hotel. I checked in, and then I went over to the Hagia Sophia. Now, the Hagia Sophia is one of, I would say, one of the most influential, most, I don't know if I'd say popular, I don't know what word I'm trying to think of, but recognizable religious buildings in the world. It was built in the 6th century, so like 500 AD. And, you know, it's been a mosque, it's been a church, it's been a museum, and it's just recently, within the past year or two, been converted back to a mosque. So, because of that, you are still obviously able to go inside of the mosque. However, you're very limited with what you can do inside. When it was a museum, you know, you could like go up to the different floors and really just, you know, explore the entire building. There's a ton of history in this place. One of the councils, I believe the Council of Constantinople happened in the Hagia Sophia, where they really talked about like the, I don't know all the history behind this, but the councils back then, they would come together and like debate different things about Christianity and like what was true. Like one of the councils, they came up with which book should be in the Bible that we have today. And so one of the councils was actually held at the Hagia Sophia, and you could actually go like to the room where they met and everything like that. All the frescoes that are there are pretty amazing. So unfortunately, because it's been converted back to a mosque, a lot of that you're not able to see anymore. You're able to go into the main room and, you know, really just soak in the huge dome and, you know, this amazingly large room there. And I actually had, I'm really not sure why I had this opportunity. I'm not sure if it's because it was a museum, and so they're a little bit more liberal and cavalier with, you know, what you can do in the Hagia Sophia. But I was actually able to be inside the mosque during the call to prayer, which if you've ever been to an Arab country when they're doing the call to prayer, you know, they're always blasting it over loudspeakers, and you can hear it anywhere in the city. And it's really, it's a crazy moment just to, you know, experience. And it's honestly one of my favorite parts about going to an Arab country like that, is just because of, you know, how it's just like, bam, at certain times, bam, you know, there's the call to prayer and you can just hear it all over the city. It's a really interesting experience. But I was in the Hagia Sophia and all of a sudden the call to prayer starts. And normally, you know, if you're not allowed to be inside a mosque during the call to prayer, I mean, that's just a no-no. And most places will have like signs set up, like the call to prayer is at like 2:05. So, you know, you can't enter the mosque from 1:35 until like 4 o'clock or whatever. But the Hagia Sophia was not like that. And so I'm not sure if it's because it was a museum, and so they're being a little bit more liberal with who they allow in and everything like that. I know like the Blue Mosque, which is right across the street, I couldn't get in during the call to prayer. So it's not just like an Istanbul thing. But it was a cool experience. I've never been able to do that before. And so it was a great experience. It was really awesome to be able to just, you know, witness this. And be able to just be inside the mosque during the call to prayer is really interesting. And I was glad I was able to have that opportunity. Another interesting thing is that because it used to be a Christian church for part of the time, there are a lot of Christian frescoes up on the walls. And there's a few of them that you can still see, but then a few of them they've actually covered with sheets. And years ago, they actually had like painted over them. And so then when the museum came in, then they like restored all of the frescoes and everything like that. And so I guess this time when they changed it back to a mosque, they're like, well, I guess we won't paint it, you know, paint over again. We'll just, you know, cover them up with these sheets. So whenever you see like sheets hanging up on the wall, it's because they're covering Christian frescoes, which is pretty interesting, in my opinion. So anyways, Hagia Sophia, I mean, this is a must. You have to go to the Hagia Sophia. I mean, it's an iconic site there in Istanbul and honestly in all of Turkey. So definitely check that out. It's free to go inside. I think there might have been like a security checkpoint, and that was honestly about it. Make sure you're dressed appropriately. You know, have like long pants on. I always get confused when you're supposed to have your hat on or not. Some places you're supposed to have a hat on, some places you're not supposed to have a hat on. So I kind of just like, you know, watch to see what everyone else does, because I usually wear a hat wherever I'm at. I don't think you're supposed to wear a hat inside a mosque, but, you know, just double check and see what else everyone else is doing. Women, like your shoulders, everything needs to be covered up, things like that. You know, just, you know, wear appropriate things, you know, follow the culture there, everything like that. Be respectful. So also, right across the street, so it's like there's the Hagia Sophia, and then there's like this nice little park with a fountain that's really pretty. And then on the other side is the Blue Mosque, and it's actually called the Sultan Ahmet Mosque. And it's supposed to be really beautiful inside. It's called the Blue Mosque because there's a ton of blue tiles and things like that all around. Unfortunately, it's under renovation. It's been under renovation for years. I've watched like vlogs from a couple years ago, and it was under renovation then. So I came to the conclusion that like everything in Turkey is being renovated. I'm not sure if it's just like, oh, it's, you know, it's time to do it. It's our, you know, every 100 years we're going to renovate things, or if it's because of COVID, they're like, you know, tourism's down, so let's go ahead and renovate. But there was so many things that I went to do, and they were under renovation. So it was really, really interesting. It just all happened at the same time. But unfortunately, I wasn't able to see too much of the Blue Mosque. Every once in a while, there would be like a slit in the scaffolding, like tarp covers, and you could kind of peek in between and see, you know, all the beautiful blue tiles. But definitely was not able to do it justice. So hopefully, you know, if I ever get to go back to Istanbul, the Blue Mosque will be renovated and I'll get to, you know, experience all of the blue tiles there. So right outside of the Blue Mosque is what's called the Hippodrome. And the Hippodrome is sort of like, I believe back in ancient times, the Hippodrome was where like it was like a racetrack where they'd have horse races and things like that. And there's a few cool things there. There's so much history in Istanbul. I mean, I was just like walking from on the bus stop to my hotel, and there's just like these different monuments all over. And you'd go up and read the little placard for it, and it was like, oh yeah, this thing was brought here by like Alexander in, you know, like 500 AD or whenever Alexander was alive. And it's just like, what? It's just like in the middle of the city, and there's just like this huge statue or this obelisk or like all this random stuff. So, you know, if you just like wandered aimlessly around Istanbul for hours, there's so many awesome things that you would just discover. That's why I love it so much. I love cities where you can just wander around and not only discover things that are amazing, but discover things that, you know, you spent a month researching this trip and you never crossed it. It's like there's so many cool things in this city that a month's worth of research wasn't able to find it. I mean, that's when you know you're in a great city. So just wander around Istanbul. I was never worried. It's a pretty safe feeling city. Like I said, it's a pretty European feeling city in terms of like the conveniences and the safety and things like that. I mean, obviously in Europe, you know, there's some unsafe places, but, you know, you have all the conveniences and luxuries of Europe, but then on the other hand, you have like all of the history and all the culture and all of the, you know, benefits of being in a Asian culture, a Middle Eastern culture as well. So it's really like the best of both worlds. I mean, I love Europe when I go there because it just feels so easy and safe and like almost like America. Like, I feel like I can just figure it out. Whereas the Middle East, I just love the culture. I love the food. I love the history. And so, like, Istanbul is just like, bam, perfect mix of both of those things. So anyways, the Hippodrome is filled with like a ton of awesome stuff. There's the walled obelisk, which is like an obelisk, which is like surrounded by brick. And then there's the obelisk of Theodosius, and then also the serpent column. All of those were erected there to commemorate like a battle or, you know, a leader coming into town. So just like a monument of some sort. So check those out. They're all really old and really cool. And I mean, they're right there next to the Blue Mosque, so you might as well check them out. Also in Istanbul, you'll cross it if you're walking from the bus stop to like the Hagia Sophia. You walk by it. But the Grand Bazaar. The Grand Bazaar is the oldest mall in the world. So for all of you people who love, you know, walking around the mall, go check out the Grand Bazaar. It's the oldest one in the world. It's pretty cool. I mean, there's just, oh man, there's probably 1,000 shops in there. And, you know, it ranges from anything from like lanterns to Turkish delight to like tea to artwork. I mean, there's just a ton of stuff in this place. It's so picturesque. There's so many people in there just milling about. It's an awesome place to be. So definitely check that out. There's also the spice market. I think there's two spice markets there in Istanbul. I found one of them. Not sure if it was the one that I was actually looking for, but it's the Egyptian spice market. And, you know, it was during COVID, so I had to wear a mask the whole time. And I was like, dang, I bet this place smells amazing. But I had to wear my mask, so that was pretty unfortunate. But definitely check out the Grand Bazaar. Check out the spice market as well. It's pretty close by, and it's pretty cool. Check out, you know, you have to get some Turkish delight. You're in Turkey. It's like, you have to do it. I never knew what Turkish delight was. I always watched the Chronicles of Narnia movie, and they were like, you kind of just betrayed your whole family for Turkish delight. It must be pretty amazing. And then I tried it, and it's pretty good, but I'm like, is it really that good? I don't know. But there's like a ton of different kinds. I was really surprised. You can get like rose flavored, and you can get like chocolate flavored. There's like all these different ones. They're pretty cool. So check that out. So also, the Galata Towers is there in Istanbul. It's a pretty cool tower. You can see like all of Istanbul from the top of it. You do have to pay to go inside and climb to the top. It's not too expensive, and it's definitely worth the views. You have to cross one of the rivers there. I'm not sure which one it is. You cross the cross the river there, and it's quite a bit of a hike, maybe a mile or so from the Hagia Sophia area. But, you know, it's totally worth it. I went at night, which was really cool because you could see all the lights. You could see the boats on the Bosphorus, all the river junction there. And so you can really, you know, point out from out there, you can see where Europe is and where Asia is. And it's really awesome to just be able to take that in. So, you know, I really enjoyed being up there at night. I can't, you know, tell you what it'd be like during the day. So maybe check out both. But being up there at night was really cool. So one last thing that I really want to recommend. Well, actually, there's a couple more things. I lied. But the Seven Hills Terrace Hotel. This hotel has some of the best views there. It's like right next to the Hagia Sophia. And so you have some amazing views of the Hagia Sophia. And they have a rooftop restaurant. And so even if you don't, it's pretty expensive to stay there. So if you don't want to spend that much to spend the night there, I went up there and had dinner, and it wasn't too expensive. Actually, I didn't even get dinner. I think I just went up there and got dessert. I just got something super cheap just so I could enjoy the views. It was a cool atmosphere. There was a ton of people up there. There was like a few different birthdays going on, and they like turn out all the lights and sing happy birthday. It's pretty awesome. But the views are great. And so then once you go to the restaurant, you can actually go up one more level and there's like a rooftop. I think you can eat up there. You might even be able to sneak up and like not even eat and just climb up there. Especially when I was there was like literally nobody, you know, like nobody was up there just to take pictures. So the great views from the Seven Hills Terrace. You just go inside, tell them you're going to the restaurant, and then, you know, hit the elevator. So definitely check that out if you're in the area for some great views. Now, all this, I did all this in one day, and it was about 12 miles of walking. So I was pretty exhausted by the end of the day, but, you know, I saw a ton of stuff. It was a jam-packed day, but an awesome day. So I spent the night there in Istanbul, woke up the next morning. I got up pretty early to go check out the sunrise at the Hagia Sophia. The sunrise was not too incredible. However, it was just really cool, you know, just to be there all by myself. Like I mentioned, there was that park there in between the Blue Mosque and the Hagia Sophia. And so I was literally like one of the only people in the park. There were some like bread vendors there. And so I kind of just got some of the famous circle bread, sesame seed circle bread, and just ate that and watched the sun come up. And it was super peaceful, super pretty. You kind of just watch the city come alive. And it was pretty great. So there is an amazing museum there in Istanbul, the Archaeological Museum. And it's made up of three different parts. And I think I probably did it in a couple hours. It's not too big of a museum. It's a pretty perfect size, in my opinion. And so definitely check that out. They have some really cool stuff. They have part of the Ishtar Gate, which is the processional way that led to the city of Babylon in Iraq. And they have, there were a few different pieces of the Ishtar Gate. So there were dragons, there were lions, and there were cows. And there's only like three museums in the entire world that have the dragon Ishtar Gate pieces. And the Istanbul Archaeological Museum is one of those. I believe the, I think the Louvre has some, and then maybe like the Berlin Museum has a lot of Babylonia pieces too. So I think they have some as well. So it's really cool. They have some really unique pieces. They have a lot of high relief carving pieces, sarcophagi and things like that that are really cool. And a lot of the sarcophagi still have like painting, residual paint on them, which is really awesome. Because most of the time when you see like one of those marble carved sarcophagi, it's just like, oh, that's really pretty. It's just, you know, marble carving. But all this stuff has been painted before. And I feel like, you know, whenever you go to a museum, you never really think about, you know, marble statues used to be painted. Or, you know, like all these temples used to be painted, just because over the years it's all worn away. So whenever you see like the residual, you know, paint left on one of these things, it's pretty cool. And it's pretty unique. So there's some awesome pieces there at the Archaeological Museum. Highly recommend checking it out. I think they're closed on Sundays. They're closed one day out of the week. So just make sure you get it right. There's the Mosaic Museum in Istanbul, which is really cool. They have some awesome mosaics there, but it was closed on the day that I wanted to go. It's actually right off the Hippodrome. So if you're there on the day it's open, you know, check that out. There's also what's called the Cistern, which is like an underground, like watery area. I'm not really sure what it is exactly. It was closed for renovations. I didn't see anything about this online. Everything that I looked up said it was open, and so I was kind of surprised when I went there and there was just like a paper, you know, glued on the door saying it was closed. So I'm not sure if that's opened again at the moment. Maybe they were doing renovations as well. I'm not really sure. But you know, if it's open, check that out as well. Wow, so that was just Istanbul. I mean, there's a ton to do there, and I could go back for a few more days and probably, you know, fill that up as well. So definitely spend some time in Istanbul, give you, you know, a few days at least. It's a great city just to explore. There was an awesome restaurant. I honestly can't remember the name of it. I got like some lamb kebabs, which are awesome. And they were right next to the Blue Mosque. And so you sat next to this huge window that just looked right at the Blue Mosque. It was really beautiful. And so if you're just wandering around looking for food, check that out. Okay, so after Istanbul, I flew to Kayseri, which is near Gorme, which is the Cappadocia region of Turkey. And Cappadocia is the reason that I really wanted to go to Turkey to begin with. I mean, you always see pictures of hot air balloon rides over what are called the fairy chimneys there in Cappadocia. And so that made my bucket list. And so I was like, I want to, you know, fly in a hot air balloon over the fairy chimneys in Cappadocia. And so that got Turkey on my map. And so, you know, all this other stuff, you know, just came after the fact, like, oh, look at all this other amazing stuff that I can do there as well. So this was like, I cannot wait to get to Cappadocia. I rented a car, which was really awesome, and I'm really glad that I did. Renting a car in Turkey was super easy. Getting the car was not easy. Both times, the rental car agencies were pretty brutal to work with. They were just like tons of miscommunications. I did use like random companies, so maybe if you use like a name brand like Hertz or like Dollar Rental Car, like they have those there. So maybe it'd been easier. But the rental car companies I went with, it was just a pain in the butt to get my car and to drop off my car every single time. But I'm really glad I got the car because it was really awesome just to have that flexibility and that freedom. And I don't really know if it was cheaper to rent a car versus, you know, hiring a private driver, but it definitely wasn't more expensive. And so it was definitely worth, you know, getting, in my opinion. Driving in Turkey was super chill. You drive on the right side of the road. Everything's super easy to figure out. Make sure you have not only maps, but then also Google Maps will work as well. But it's nice to have a backup just in case. I found that some places, like one of my hotels didn't show up on Google Maps, but it showed up on Maps Me. And so I drove like 10 minutes to this random location and no one spoke English. And I was like, where's my hotel? It's supposed to be right here. And no one could help me. And so then I looked it up on my other Maps app and then it was like, oh, it's 10 minutes away. And I eventually found it. So just having, you know, being able to double check your locations will come in handy. But yeah, I rented a car there in Kayseri and I drove to Gorme and I landed at night. And so I drove at night. And I really enjoyed that because then you could kind of see like the outlines of the fairy chimneys there, but then I knew like, I can't wait to wake up in the morning and kind of just see where I'm at, you know, just I'm in the middle of all these chimneys and I don't know what it looks like. It's going to be amazing in the morning. And it really was. It was really awesome. I woke up super early, like at 4 in the morning, and my the hot air balloon company drove and picked me up, and we drove out into like the middle of nowhere to get into this hot air balloon. And so it was really cool, and I've been really fortunate. I've flown in hot air balloons twice, and each time, you know, it's been, you know, gone off without a hitch. And a lot of times I'll read or watch videos where, you know, hot air balloon rides get canceled because of weather, different things like that. They're really finicky about them. But both times I've ridden in them, they've gone off without a hitch. Knock on wood there. It's been pretty awesome. So it was really pretty because, I mean, it's dark when you get there. And of course, like the fire going into the hot air balloons is awesome. And the entire landscape is just like dotted with flames of hot air balloons, and then, you know, some of them start before you do. So it's really awesome. I will say that I was a little underimpressed by the views while I was in the hot air balloon. I feel like most of the time when you see pictures, there's just like fairy chimneys everywhere and it looks amazing. But I think most of the time it's like looking from the ground at the hot air balloons. Those are the pictures that you really see. And so I think, although, you know, riding in a hot air balloon is definitely a bucket list item, and I'm so glad I did it, I think, you know, you kind of just have to enjoy the views while you're up there and enjoy the experience. However, I think the best views come from the ground when you're in Cappadocia, in my honest opinion. I really enjoyed, you know, hiking through the region, and I think I enjoyed those views better than in the hot air balloon. But I definitely enjoyed the experience of being in the air above them and just experiencing it from that viewpoint as well. So definitely, you know, get a hot air balloon ride while you're in Cappadocia. It was like maybe $80 or something like that, but totally worth it. Now, like I said, I was there in November, which is definitely low season, not to mention it was COVID. I counted about 20 other balloons in the sky, but in peak season, there can be up to like over 200. So it was definitely a little sparse, but, you know, it was a cool experience in and of itself. The next day, I actually got up early to check out the sunrise and hopefully see some balloons from the ground. But they weren't flying, and it was a pretty nice day, so I didn't think it had to do with weather. I think it just had to do with demand. There weren't, you know, enough people who had booked flights that day. And so, you know, if you're going in off season, you know, that's a real possibility, that you might not be able to fly if there's not enough people, you know, to make a flight. So I kind of already mentioned this, but definitely get out and hike. I mean, especially on Maps.me, I love that app just because there's, you know, it gives you hiking trails on there, which is really cool. And so get out and hike. I stayed in Gourmet, and I didn't realize this beforehand, really, but Cappadocia is like a region. And so there's a few different cities or little towns inside Cappadocia. Gourmet is like the most popular, I think. But there's a bunch of different hiking trails around there. I hiked from sort of like downtown Gourmet to this viewpoint that overlooks Rose Valley. And this was an awesome hike. There were a ton of different, you know, cliff dwellings that you were able to climb in and explore. There's the Column Church, which is really awesome. You go inside and it's this like huge cavernous room with like, I think there's four or six columns. And it's just, it's really impressive. All of these homes and this church were just dug straight out of, the cliffs there. So it's really impressive, you know, people, you know, hundreds, thousands of years have lived there. And a lot of them were, you know, like refugees or people fleeing from different things. But it's really impressive. So after I hiked to Rose Valley, it was about a 3-mile hike. There's actually a little restaurant over there, which is like a mile from the viewpoint, that you could drive up to. But I really enjoyed the hike from Gourmet to Rose Valley. The views along the way were just incredible. It wasn't too difficult of a hike at all. So also, after going to the Rose Valley, I hiked over to Love Valley, which is a pretty pretty popular spot there. Pretty photogenic area as well. That was about 3 miles, and it's pretty interesting because you don't feel like you've really walked that far, and then you like turn around and you're like, dang, I hiked all the way from that mountain that's like way in the distance and I can barely see. So like everything is like kind of close. It doesn't seem too far away, and the hikes are just so beautiful that, you know, it's not too difficult. After Love Valley, I hiked to Pigeon Valley. I think I could have hiked a little bit farther into Pigeon Valley, but I was pretty tired. I'd hiked by, you know, 8 miles at that point, so I was ready to be done. So Pigeon Valley is pretty interesting. You fly over it on your hot air balloon flights if you can most of the time. This is where a lot of people used to live. And so interestingly enough, this region was very unfertile. And so they like dug all these little holes into the rocks for pigeons to live in. And then when the pigeons would go to the bathroom, then they would like harvest the pigeon droppings, and then they would create fertilizer out of it. And then they were able to, you know, grow things in the pigeon droppings. And so it's really interesting. You'll see like all these little tiny holes dug into the cliffs, and that's what they're for. They're pigeon houses. So there's a lot of great hiking there in Cappadocia. You know, I'm sure there's more that I could have done, but I feel like those three places, you know, gave me a great overview of the area and allowed me to see some really awesome sights. There was one place, I think I was trying to leave Love Valley to get over to Pigeon Valley, and I like totally lost the trail. And I was like, I'm not backtracking, because if I had to backtrack, I was going to have to add a few miles to my hike. And so I literally just like scaled the sandstone cliff, and I'm like, it was pretty scary, because it was like there's drop-offs on either side, and you get into like these rim rock areas where you're like, if I go up this, I'm not going to be able to get back down, and am I even supposed to be up here? Like, it was pretty interesting. kind of forgot about it until this moment, but yeah, do some hiking. It'll be totally worth it. So after all that hiking, you're going to be absolutely starving. And my driver from Istanbul, from my hotel in Istanbul to the airport, had told me you have to try Turkish ravioli. And apparently Gourmet is like pretty well known for its Turkish ravioli, because he was like, every time I go there, I make sure to get ravioli. So I got some ravioli. Let me tell you, this stuff was amazing. It's like these little bitty ravioli, and it's like in this lemony tomato sauce, cheesy sauce. It is so good. I mean, I ate so much of it. It was amazing. I obviously had like some hummus and some pita, and then there was a Turkish salad, which was interesting. It was like a Turkish walnut salad. I don't know. It was all amazing. Turkish ravioli was absolutely amazing. And so if you're in Gourmet, apparently that's, you know, what they're well known for. So get it there. It's great. One of the last things I did there in Gourmet is I went to the Gourmet Open Air Museum. I almost didn't do it. But then I was reading about all these like different cave churches, and I was like, I want to check those out. And then it turns out they're inside the Gourmet Open Air Museum. So I was like, well, I guess I got to do it. It's really interesting. There's probably, maybe like five different churches there. There's like some dwellings, but the churches are the main part, because there's a lot of like, there's a lot of paintings and frescoes inside of these dugout cave churches. And the frescoes are amazing. I mean, they're really detailed. All the colors, because they're inside, are incredibly vivid. And so I definitely recommend checking out the Open Air Museum. There's a ton of, like I said, frescoes that are from like the 10th century. So they're like over 1,000 years old, and they look brand new. I mean, they're absolutely incredible. And it's just very historical. So if you're into that, I definitely recommend checking that out. I think I maybe spent like an hour there. I went there before I headed back to the airport to leave Gourmet there. So definitely check that out if something like that would interest you. So after Gourmet in Kayseri, I flew to Izmir. Izmir is a pretty big city, actually. And I rented another car. Once again, terrible rental experience, but having the car was awesome. Drove to Selçuk, which is near Ephesus. Now, Ephesus is a huge ancient city there in Turkey. It used to be like one of the major trading ports anywhere in the Middle East there back in the day, and it was actually like numero uno until the actual like the river silted up, and so then after that you couldn't get like ships into the city anymore, and so then like the city kind of just dried up and crumbled away. But it was a huge port there, huge port city. It's a pretty famous like religious place as well. The Book of Ephesians was written for it, and there's just a ton of history around this area. So obviously I spent the night there, got up super early, headed to Ephesus. I think I got there like 30 minutes before they opened, and there's two entrances, and I obviously went to the wrong one because that was how this trip was going. I just kept going to the wrong entrances. And luckily it turned out there was no one there anyways, and so, you know, I was still the only one there. But there's two entrances, and if you go to the top one, that's the one you're supposed to go to. But on the map, I was going to the top one, but it wasn't. I don't know how I messed that up, but it worked out in the long run. As soon as I got inside, actually, before I went inside, to buy the ticket, you actually have a few different options. And I forgot to mention this at the beginning. There's a few different, sort of like the Paris Museum Pass there in Paris, France, where you like buy the one pass and let you into like 100 museums. It's an amazing deal. They kind of had the same thing there in Turkey. But they have a few different like options. You can buy like the Turkey Pass, which like allows you into every site in Turkey. But then like in each individual city, there's different passes as well. So when I was at Ephesus, they asked me if I wanted to buy like the Ephesus Pass, and it allowed me into the city of Ephesus. It allowed me into the terraced houses, which is an extra cost. And then it allowed me into St. John's Basilica. And I think that was it. I think it allowed me into three things, and it was like an extra couple dollars. And so I went ahead and bought that. I did not buy the entire Turkish like museum pass deal. I didn't think it was going to save me any money. And I'm pretty sure I was right about that. It might have saved me a little bit. But you know, I didn't splurge on that. If you're spending a lot of time, you know, more than a week there, and going to more, you know, historical sites, I think it would be worth it. But for me, I didn't, you know, I did all the math and I didn't think it added up, but the Ephesus pass, was really nice and it did save me some money. I got into a couple places for free because of it. So definitely recommend purchasing that at least. So one of the highlights of Ephesus is the Library of Celsus, which is this, you know, it's this awesome facade there. And you know, there's all these carvings, and there's these statues. It's really beautiful. And you know, if you Google Ephesus, it's probably the first image that's going to show up. It's really awesome. I didn't really know, you know, all these places you just show up and you're like, wow, this has been standing for thousands of years. But this had actually, you know, been renovated and, you know, like been sort of rebuilt. And so it was really interesting. They had, you know, these little placards that kind of gave you step by step of, you know, the rebuilding process, which is really interesting. But it was really beautiful. I had the entire thing to myself for about 30, 45 minutes. And then a few other people started to show up. And so then I continued walking. So like I said, there's two entrances. So you can start at one entrance and then walk to the other. And so I went ahead and walked to the top entrance there. And then I kind of turned around and then made my way back. And so, you know, there's just stuff everywhere for you to just take in. And so, you know, even if you do it twice, you're still discovering new things on the way back. And so it was really good. I highly recommend going to one side all the way to the end and then, you know, walking back. There was an audio guide, a free audio guide, Rick Steves, audio guide, that if you start it from the top entrance, it starts from up there and works all the way down, I believe, maybe. But it was really interesting. And so I listened to that one of the directions. And so it was really helpful. It pointed out certain things and it's, you know, kind of goes with a walking pace. So if you're just walking, you know, it kind of, you know, points out certain things. And I'd listened to it like the day before, so I kind of had an idea. And so I knew like, okay, something about this thing is about to come up. So I'm going to, you know, wait for it. So that was pretty interesting as well. I'd never done something like that before. Listen to an audio guide as I'm actually in a site. So there's, you know, a lot of different things inside of Ephesus. The Library of Celsus is probably the most, you know, popular. But then also there are the terrace houses, which is where like all the rich people there in Ephesus lived. And you have to buy an extra ticket to go inside. Or if you bought that original extra ticket at the beginning, it lets you inside. And like I said, I recommend getting that extra ticket because it was really cool. And I'm glad I did it. I probably wouldn't have otherwise. But it was really beautiful. There's still a ton of frescoes on the walls, that are really unique, and personal, which I really enjoyed seeing. There's a lot of awesome mosaics there in the floor. And then one of the most interesting things was there was a ton of marble in this place. And I never knew this before, but like the rich people would get slabs of marble and literally hang them on their walls. And so there was just like these thin sheets of marble, you know, hung up on all the walls of these rich people's houses, which was really interesting. I didn't know that was a thing until I went there, but it was really impressive. And I was like, wow, you know, if I walked into a rich person's house and they had marble hanging on the wall, I'd be pretty impressed too. So pretty interesting. There's like this huge communal bathroom there, which is pretty interesting. There's just like these marble slabs with holes cut into them. And interestingly enough, they would like send down their slaves while they're at the theater or whatever to like warm up their seat. And then they like go down there when the seat was warm and go to the bathroom. So it's a pretty nice deal, I suppose. Not for the slaves who had to go do it. But pretty interesting. There's just interesting, weird things all over the place, you know, statues, carvings, random things all over. There's a huge theater there, which is really impressive. Part of it was under construction. But you know, you could still walk around half of it and kind of just sit and, you know, enjoy the view. There's the grand walkway, which goes all the way, or used to go all the way to the sea. Is like right leading up to the theater. And so if you're at the very top of the theater, you can kind of just like, you can see the walkway and it just goes on forever. It's really impressive. So Ephesus is a must. I mean, that's why you're in Izmir more than likely, is to go to Ephesus. So definitely worth it. I spent a few hours there. By the end, I mean, let me tell you, traveling during COVID was, you know, maybe I shouldn't say this, but it was awesome. I mean, there was nobody at Ephesus. I mean, at one point there might've been like 10 people and I was like, gosh, it's getting crowded here. I need to get out of here. But I mean, you know, during peak times, I bet that place is a madhouse, and it was incredible. I met these people from the UK, they're travel vloggers, and they had been like traveling all over, and they're like, yeah, like no one's at any of these sites. And it's absolutely amazing. And it was. So anyways, another thing, while I'm on top of them, they had driven all the way from the UK to Turkey. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, dang, that's a long way. I mean, that's literally the top left-hand corner of Europe all the way to the bottom right-hand corner of Europe. I'm like, that's like driving all the way across the continent. That's crazy. And then, you know, I was pretty impressed. And then I went home later that day and I like Google it and it's like 1,000 miles or less than that. And it's like, I used to drive that in one day when I was in college, like driving back home. And it just puts into perspective like how big Europe is. Like Europe is not that big when compared to the United States. It's pretty interesting. And I always get hung up on this because I feel like a lot of travelers, you're like, oh, I've been to so many countries or anything like that. But then I'm like, you know, if I've been to, you know, like if the United States is the size of Europe, like shouldn't I count like how many states I've been to and like add that to the mix? Because if a European person is like, oh, I've been to 5 countries, it's like, well, you could have, you know, gotten your car and driven in a circle in an hour and been to those 5 countries. So, you know, that's not that impressive when it takes me 12 hours to drive across Texas. So I don't know. I'm always interested about what people think about that, and whether, I don't know, just if you haven't been able to like backpack Europe or something, I feel like there should be like a little asterisk or something next to the amount of countries. But anyways, really off topic there. Anyways, so back to Ephesus, that area there. There's a ton to do there. There's the Temple of Artemis, which is one of the original 7 ancient wonders of the world. There's like 2 columns standing. So I knew that it was there. I knew it was like completely in ruin. You know, when you think about the 7 ancient wonders of the world, you think of the Great Pyramid and that's it. But really, you know, all these places are like, the locations are still there. There's the Mausoleum of Halicarnassus, I believe it's called, down there in southern Turkey. It's one of the original 7 ancient wonders of the world. It's still there in ruin. All these places are still, you know, pretty much around. I think the only one that's like no one knows anything about is like the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. But I mean, like the Lighthouse of Alexandria, you can go and see, like if you go diving in the Mediterranean up there, you can like see pieces of it, like the rubble of it because it collapsed from an earthquake. I mean, maybe you can't see the Colossus of Rhodes, but you can like see where it was at, and I think they have like a new statue there or something. But I never really knew this until I just started researching different things. But the Temple of Artemis is still kind of there. There's like 2 columns. So I show up and there's this huge empty field, and there's just like a column over here, there's a column over there, there's a few random rocks lying around, and you're like, this used to be one of the ancient wonders of the world. And just, you know, really, you know, put your perspective in check that, wow, this used to be like one of the top seven things in the entire world to see. And this is what it's come to. Like, it's just crazy, you know, just, it's really crazy to put things into perspective like that. So also in the area, so definitely check that out. I mean, even though there's nothing there, it's free, which is really cool. It's just right off one of the main roads. It's really close to St. John's Basilica. And so, you know, just stop in. There was like one other person there for like 5 seconds and then they left and I had the whole thing to myself, which is really crazy. So definitely check that out. I mean, it's worthwhile just to say you did it. So St. John's Basilica is also there. It was part of that Ephesus Little Pass. It was really awesome. It was like an old church. And the proposed burial place of St. John is there too, which I didn't realize until I was there. So that was pretty interesting and a, you know, pretty cool thing to see there. There's a couple other places in the area. There's the House of Mary. And so this, so apparently St. John went to Ephesus and then he was exiled to Patmos. And some people say that after he was like, was really old, on Patmos, they allowed him to come back to Ephesus, and he died in Ephesus. So that's why his proposed burial place is there in Ephesus. And so whenever Jesus died, he basically told Joseph to take care of Mary, his mother. And so whenever St. John went to Ephesus, she, you know, went with him. And so apparently this house is the proposed place where she lived. Now, I drove all the way up to the top, and it's on the top of this like huge mountain. And first off, I'll say that the views up there are amazing. So even if you don't want to go to the House of Mary, drive up this mountain because the views, you can see the entire Izmir, Ephesus area. It's, or not Izmir, but the entire city of Ephesus there. It's beautiful. So definitely check that out. I went up there and, you know, I was kind of like on the fence of whether I wanted to go or not, but then the ticket price was like really expensive. And so I was just like, yeah, no, that's okay. I didn't want to go to it that bad. Now, I did see later that, like, apparently there's a church up there, and so sometimes they're having service, and then you can't really even, you know, explore that much anyway. So apparently that was going on when I was there anyway, so I was extra glad I didn't stop. But, you know, I'm sure it would be really interesting. I was just, you know, I had seen a lot that day, and so I wasn't really too enthused about it, and so I was, yeah, okay, I'll just turn around and go home. So you can definitely check that out. Also, the Grotto of the Seven Sleepers. Don't really know the entirety of this story, but apparently there were like seven guys who like went out to a cave and like fell asleep. And then like a few hundred years later, they woke up and then they went down into the city and they're like, whoa, this doesn't look like it did when we left. And yeah, I don't know the entirety of this story. That was like the Spark Notes version of what happened or what supposedly happened there. But you can go to the grotto, which is like a cave, and check that out as well. I didn't even go to see how much it cost. I don't know. I had spent several hours at Ephesus, you know, an hour or so at St. John's, and I was pretty tired. So, I did not. There's a museum there, the Ephesus Museum. They have some awesome stuff, just things that they have pulled out of the city. And I believe it was also on that pass as well. So, that was a pretty good deal. But there's a lot to see there in that museum. It's a good sized museum. It probably took me about an hour to look through it. They have a lot of carvings, a lot of statues, things like that. And I definitely, you know, recommend checking that out. They have, some of the statues of, Artemis, which is who the Temple of Artemis was for. I think they have two statues there. So that was pretty interesting to see as well. So definitely check that out. So near Izmir also is Pamukkale. And Pamukkale is really famous for the thermal fountains and what's called the Cotton Castle. It's like all these thermal terraces. And it's really pretty. I'll be honest, if all there was were the thermal fountains and the Cotton Castle, I would say it wasn't worth it, in my honest opinion. It was a couple-hour drive away from Izmir, and so you get to the Cotton Castle. This is where I got lost and where the people didn't speak any English or anything to help me figure out where I was going, and so then I kind of just had to like wander around and eventually found my hotel. Anyways, so it's really known for what's called the Cotton Castle. It's like all these thermal pools, and they created like these terraces on the side of the mountain there. and they're really pretty, don't get me wrong. You can like walk up and down the terraces, and I'll remind you, it was November, and it was actually really cold in Turkey. I was surprised. It was really cold, so I'm like, wow, this thermal fountain is going to feel really good, and you're walking down, and it's absolutely freezing. There's like this one little stream of thermal hot water that goes all the way to the bottom, and all the thermal pools, you know, like have been slowly filled, and so they're all like freezing. So it's not like it'd be a good summer location, but it was not like a hot spring or anything like that. They actually, most of the hotels have thermal water, and so I did like take a thermal bath that night, which was really nice, and it was pretty warm. But at Palm Akali, it was not too hot. So anyways, if that's all that was there, I would have been pretty disappointed, and I would definitely have recommended not to go there unless you're just really into thermal things. They had like a thermal fountain in the middle of the city, and they had like this wall built around it. It was really cool. It was just like this huge blob of mineral deposits, and it was pretty interesting. But anyways, also at Palm Akali is Hierapolis, which is a really, it's another pretty significant historical location there. And there's also one of the most spectacular theaters. I believe like everything I read said it was one of the most best preserved theaters, Roman theaters in the world, at least outside of Rome. And it was beautiful. I mean, the backdrop, most theaters you go to, like, it's literally just the seats, and maybe a little bit of the backdrop, but this backdrop here was absolutely incredible. And so yeah, the theater at Hierapolis was, you know, the piece de resistance, whatever. It was really awesome. So definitely check that out. There's a church up on the hill, which is where, the apostle Philip was apparently martyred. So that's pretty interesting as well. And so yeah, Hierapolis definitely saved the day. Going into it, I was like, oh, there's like this ancient city next to it. That's pretty cool. But when I got there, I was like, wow, Hierapolis is amazing. Like, it was really cool. There's a pool there, and it's like the main hot spring area, and it's called Cleopatra's Pool because apparently Cleopatra swam there several times or something. It's really pretty. It's really cool because there's like old columns that used to surround the pool, you know, like all collapsed and fell into the pool and they didn't get them out. And so there's just like tons of marble columns underneath the water, and it's really interesting. So definitely check those out. Hierapolis, you know, is really incredible. So I do recommend checking out Palm Akali because of Hierapolis. Okay, so last but not least, I feel like I've been talking a super long time. There's just so much to do in Turkey. But while you're over there near the Palm Akali area, you have to check out Laodicea. Now, Laodicea is one of the seven churches there in Revelation. And so it's really, you know, historically significant and, you know, religiously significant as well. But it was one of the most low-key awesome historical sites, like ruins, that I've been to. There's this huge columned pathway. There's so many columns still standing everywhere, and it's under renovation, and I think they maybe just started renovating it a few years ago and really like trying to create something out of this site. But it's amazing. I maybe stumbled across like four other people the entire time I was at this site, and it's awesome. I mean, it's really impressive. There's not a lot of people there because it hasn't yet become a big place to go to see. But I definitely recommend checking it out, at least until, if it was totally crowded and there were a ton of people there, you know, it'd just be another like so-so place. But because there were like nobody there, there was nobody there at all, and it was still really impressive. I definitely recommend checking out Laodicea. It wasn't very expensive at all to go see, and it was like maybe 5 or 10 minutes outside of the Ephesus area. So definitely check out that. After that, I drove back to Izmir, caught a flight back to Istanbul, and then flew back home. Didn't have to take a single COVID test, didn't catch COVID, so I would say that was a win-win. But yeah, it was very interesting traveling during COVID. There was a lot of precautions that were taken by the airlines and things like that. Wearing a mask for like 9 hours or 8 hours on a plane isn't very fun. But I will tell you, on the way back home, I had my international flight completely like the aisle all to myself. I mean, it's rare to get a flight all by yourself, but an international like 9 hour flight where I legit was able to lay down and sleep, like, was this first class? No, this was, coach in the very back of the plane. I had this entire row to myself and I could fall asleep. It was amazing. And yeah, travel hazard pay, I guess, getting able to, spread out. So I mean, there's definitely pros and cons of, traveling during a pandemic. But for me personally, I didn't have any negative experiences. I really enjoyed, I really wanted to be able to travel during the pandemic just to see what it was like. And because I knew that I was going to be one of the few people who was doing it, and so I'd really be able to, have up close and personal experiences at all these places. And it was true. I mean, at Ephesus, there was like 10 people, and I know there's probably thousands of people there every day. The airline flights getting rows to myself. What? It was a great experience, and you should definitely be safe, and take your normal precautions. But yeah, that was my experience, and it was totally worthwhile. So yeah, that's about it. If you want to see any pictures from my trip there in Turkey, check out my Instagram at Educate Your Travel. I have a story saved for it, and then I also have, numerous pictures on my feed. So check that out. Give me a follow over there, and leave a comment if you have any questions about this episode. If there's anything in particular you want me to talk about, this was my last international trip. In fact, it was my last trip that I had left to talk about. So I have a few more episodes planned out about random things, and then hopefully summer's coming up, so I'll be able to, get some more adventures for you. So I'm really looking forward to the next few weeks, and then the future as well. So with that being said, remember, it is up to you to make your life interesting. So get up, get out, explore the world, take that next adventure. Thanks for joining me here today, and can't wait to catch up with you next time. See ya.